Tuesdays, we go live to the nation's capital and Pulitzer Prize winning reporter David Farenthold at the Washington Post, who has been on the Trump beat since we first started talking to him. And when was it? 2016? My gosh.
2015, I think.
2015. It's been a long time. So how much, let's first of all get an update on your latest piece, which is how much taxpayer money is still going to the Secret Service to protect not just the president, but apparently a bunch of people. Are they actually worried about death threats?
Well, so this is the way it's supposed to work. When the president leaves office, the Secret Service protects him and his spouse for life. But if he has adult kids, if they're White House aides, once the president's out of office, they're on their own. But Trump did something that no president had done before. He extended 6 months of Secret Service protection for free to his adult children, of which there are four, and three top White House officials. And he never explained why. You know, there was no public decision, no public order. It just did it. And so what that meant was the taxpayers spent about $1.7 million over the first 6 months to protect a bunch of millionaires, people who were going on business trips, going to Cabo for the weekend, you know, going on ski trips, living a very high-style life with free taxpayer protection.
And this is money that could be going towards infrastructure? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, $1.7 million, sadly, in the world of the government is not that much money. The interesting thing about this, I think, is just that it was so unexpected. So they had to send agents and spend money on people that normally are never protected and could honestly pay for their own protection.
Yeah. Now, given your interest in Donald Trump's finances, I saw a story that a treasure trove of apparently tax records was found in a basement somewhere. Are you familiar with that?
So this is something that came out yesterday. There was a preliminary hearing in the case of Trump's CFO, Alan Weisselberg, who was indicted for tax crimes back in July. So they are having a preliminary hearing to talk about, you know, let's schedule the trial, let's talk about discovery in this case. And Weisselberg's lawyer said that the government had recently found tax documents in somebody's basement, in a co-conspirator's basement. We're still trying to figure out what that's about, but I think it relates somehow to Weisselberg. And it's not.
And explain who Alan Weisselberg is again.
So he's this longtime CFO. I mean, we're talking 3 decades CFO of the Trump Organization. Mm-hmm. And what he was charged with basically was orchestrating a tax fraud scheme within the company where he and other Trump executives would hide a portion of their compensation from the government so they wouldn't have to pay taxes on it.
Right. Now, is he still in Trump's good graces, or, I mean, could he be dismissed as a disgruntled employee?
Well, he appears to be in Trump's good graces. He is still working at the Trump Organization, doesn't have the high power that he used to. And he seems, you know, from all we've heard, he is not – the prosecutors really want him to flip and turn on Trump and offer testimony about Trump to help himself. But so far, he has not agreed to that.
He has not. Okay, the other story, and I'm not sure if you're following this or not, but there's been a Justice Department investigation into the Mueller investigation. You're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
And there was a story that broke, last week of an indictment of somebody. Basically, the thrust of the story is that a lawyer who worked for Hillary Clinton apparently lied about his status. So the FBI agents didn't know he was working for Hillary and may have deliberately planted the story that Trump was in cahoots, or the campaign was in cahoots with Russians.
Well, in many ways, this investigation led by Alfred Durham, who was a U.S. attorney, is now a special prosecutor. It's kind of like the mirror image of the Mueller report, in that everybody on one side, in this case Trump's side, believes they have these huge hopes for it. You know, it's going to end with all these people in handcuffs. It's going to find all this horrible wrongdoing. And much like the Mueller report, what it's found has been pretty minimal so far. They indicted one FBI lawyer for falsifying some part of a document that wasn't that important. Yes. And in this case, this guy who was a lawyer for Clinton, he was talking to the FBI about something that people were concerned about in 2016, which was this weird sort of internet server traffic between the Trump Organization and a Russian bank. I don't think anybody has ever found any reason to believe that that was suspicious or that it means anything. But people on the Democratic side were pushing it then. And he brought it to the FBI, which is fine to, you know, say to the FBI, look at this. Should you investigate? But the FBI, he's being charged with sort of misrepresenting one piece of that story, which was, who was he working for? Was he just doing this on his own, or was he representing, the Clinton campaign? And they say that he told them he was working on his own, but really he was hiding that he was working for Clinton. So it's a pretty small distinction. And
you're sure it's small? This is not the smoking gun that proves Hillary was behind all this?
No, I mean, it's so minimal compared to the hopes that had been raised. I mean, this was supposed to be not an investigation of Hillary Clinton or her lawyers. This was supposed to be, you know, finding the wrongdoing by Mueller and his people and to prove it was all a witch hunt. You know, mm-hmm. None of that's come out. Instead, it's this guy's been, you know, working on it for months and months and months. And this is, you know, the biggest thing he's found.
Yeah. I see that some Democrats are actually trying to make sure that if ever another Donald Trump gets in office, he can't blow off subpoenas and stuff like that. I haven't seen much coverage of this, but it's called the Protecting Our Democracy Act, and it would control the ability to grant pardons, prevent the president from ignoring subpoenas or trying to freeze money that, you know, Congress has appropriated or spend money Congress has not appropriated. I'm just wondering if that's, I mean, doesn't the separation of powers prevent Congress from doing that kind of thing?
In the most part, yes. I mean, I think, you know, the president's power to grant pardons is in the Constitution. It can't change that. But, you know, can the president resist subpoenas from Congress? I mean, the Supreme Court is sort of set up to figure out, to, you know, handle those disputes. And I think any law that Congress passes could just be challenged in the Supreme Court. So I don't think that the methods that they've chosen are going to really make much of a difference. You know, if they think Trump's ignoring them, the next Trump, or if it's Trump again, they can just cut off funding for Trump. And they have political weapons they can use. But I don't think just passing a law saying the president has to listen to us is going to change very much.
Did you catch the J6 justice demonstration in Washington over the weekend?
Well, not in person, thankfully, but I saw it on. I saw the pictures, and it seemed like it was an extremely small crowd.
It was an extremely small crowd.
Outnumbered by reporters and police and everything else. So that's good.
But peaceful. You know, I mean,
yes, peaceful. They didn't attack anybody. I think if they did, they would all have been they'd just not beaten out of them. But the interesting thing for me is
that's not what the Capitol Police do. They were just,
well, I think that's what they didn't. They didn't do that on January 6th, but I think they were ready to do it this weekend. But, you know, the question of whether the people who were arrested on January 6th were patriots or whether they were doing the right thing. That's a sadly widely held view among some Republicans. You know, so thankfully they weren't out there trying to bust them out of jail. But I think there's still come some worrying trends in polling about what happened on January 6th. The people having totally wrongheaded ideas about who those people were and what they were doing.
I ask you this almost every week, but what are the chances of another Donald Trump candidacy at this point?
I mean, if I had to bet, I would bet on that he's going to run. I don't see for him, maybe I don't think he's going to announce right now, but I don't see for him the downside of running. I mean, he can raise a bunch of money. He can.
Well, the downside would be that he would ace out any potential new Republican stars who might. I mean, do you think there's a chance of winning if he runs again?
I don't think he has a great chance of winning if he runs again. I mean, I think Biden is kind of at a low ebb right now. Maybe he'll go lower, but even now, I think Biden would beat him. And there's time for Biden to have an economic recovery and to have the end of coronavirus. I don't think Trump could beat him. I think Trump could get the Republican nomination. And the question of whether, you know, Trump will cancel out some rising Republican stars. I mean, Trump doesn't care about that. Why would he want to share the stage and share the money with like Ron DeSantis or something? I could see him trying to name Ron DeSantis as his running mate or something to try to, you know, co-opt that. But, you know, I don't see Trump giving up the stage to anybody if he's healthy enough to run.
David Farenthold, live from the Washington Post. David, thank you.
Thank you.
It is 8:24.